Hi, welcome back to Cycling Talk Podcast with me, Georgia Mahoney. This is my 100th episode. When I started the podcast way back in 2020, I never expected that I would have this many episodes and this many downloads and to have had so many amazing guests be on my podcast. So I'm so grateful to everyone that's supported me and listened to my podcast throughout this time, and I really hope you enjoy this episode with Byron Victorious rider Fred Wright. Fred is back for the third time to talk about his 2022 road season. I've loved watching him this year and I really hope you enjoy listening to this podcast. Thank you for joining me again, Fred.
Hi there. Yeah, this is number three. Is that right?
Number three.
Yeah, that's good, isn't it? Three times. I've been on a podcast. Another podcast twice before, I think. Or maybe not. Maybe this is, yeah. Well, yeah, looking forward to it. Talking about last year.
You're the only person I've had on three times, and you're the 100th episode as well.
Oh, well, there you go. It's an honour.
So, yeah, as you said, we're talking about this year. Your 2022 season with Bahrain Victorious started at the very beginning of February with Saudi Tour. How did you feel to be back racing on the road after off-season?
Yeah, I think I didn't have such a great start to the season in terms of preparation. Like, it wasn't ideal. I had a bit of a stupid crash in the December training camp and broke my collarbone. So I kind of broke my collarbone on the plate where, basically on the same place where I'd already had a plate in, and it had snapped. So I, you know, had to get a new plate put in over Christmas. So my Christmas was spent with a broken collarbone, which is quite nice, actually. But yeah, training-wise, it meant that I didn't actually get off the turbo. I was onto the turbo pretty quickly, actually, which was good. I did quite a lot of turbo, which is, I think, yeah, turbo is not too bad. But yeah, so to kind of build into this season, I was a bit annoyed that it hadn't, you know, I felt like I was going to, it's going to be better, which I'm looking forward to this year, having hopefully no hiccups. But yeah, touch wood, there were no hiccups. But yeah, Saudi, going to Saudi, I was a bit like, oh, I'm not sure what to expect. And then actually Saudi ended up being a bit of a rubbish race because I crashed on stage three and yeah, I actually broke a bone in my hand, which yeah, so a couple of setbacks early season. But in the end, I think sometimes these sort of things actually make you, yeah, you train a bit better or a bit harder in trying to get back. I almost probably did more, and it sort of set me up for the rest of the season. I think sometimes actually, yeah, you can sometimes actually go well off of, you know, look at the Matt Heyman case with that Roubaix, when he won Roubaix in 2016 or whatever it was, when he broke his collarbone and then ended up winning Roubaix. I think he broke his wrist or something. He ended up doing loads of turbo, but still managed to win Roubaix. So yeah, I still had a good year considering it didn't start so well.
Yeah, definitely. So as you said, you had a crash and broke a bone in your hand. Did you have to take some time off after this?
No, in the end, actually, I had to sort of spend 3 days in Saudi Arabia doing nothing, which was actually pretty weird. And that was kind of the worst part of the bone break. But in the end, I went to see someone in Manchester near where I live, and they said it was fine, but luckily it was my ring finger. So that's because it's got a finger on either side. He basically said that it would just heal. It would be hell. I didn't need anything. So I ended up, the first few rides were a bit painful, but it really wasn't that bad. It's just another bone to say, just another, like, yeah, broken bone rather than being that bad.
So you came back to racing with Omloop Heb-Nieuwsblad and Kerner Bosses Kerner. Can you tell me about these?
I think that those are the two races where I really thought I felt like I'd stepped up doing those two. And I think it was Heb-Nieuwsblad and Kerner where I had basically made like the pretty select front groups in both of those races. Not that there weren't any, I didn't get any sort of big results to shout out about, but I could sort of feel that my level had stepped up that a little bit more from last year. I think it was really nice, actually. And yeah, I love those two first races of the season, and I'm looking forward to doing them next year as well. But yeah, No, it was good. It was good. Good start, definitely.
Then it was Paris-Nice, and you got two top 10 finishes and helped Jack Haig to finish sixth in GC. How did you find the week?
Yeah, I think Paris-Nice is that was my first time doing Paris-Nice, and the first few stages were a bit of a shock. I think I look forward to doing it again and being a little bit more, I don't know, mentally prepared. The first few days are almost race like one day races, and yeah, I still want to do that crosswind stage again because I just messed up positioning wise. I was way too far back and wasn't in the front echelon, and everyone always wants to make the front echelon. Obviously, only sort of 30, 40, maybe less, more like 20 guys end up making the front echelon, but you still want to be there. And I kind of wish that, luckily I sort of helped Jack a little bit getting, he ended up being in the front split, I think, of sort of 20, 30 guys. But yeah, it was a shame. That first part of Paris was a bit of a shame, but then I almost got a bit stronger as the week went on. And yeah, that last stage in Nice, I really sort of felt I was climbing pretty well, and was helping Jack on some climbs as well, which is cool. I kind of, again, it was almost, yeah, that feeling of being of just stepping up since last year. And also, yeah, I think I feel like I'm quite good at not dying off as much in these sort of stage races. Like I kind of don't. I think me climbing well is often just me climbing, everyone else being a bit more tired and me just staying at the same level rather than, yeah. But no, and unfortunately I did get there with Paris-Nice was when there was that sickness going through the bunch that was everyone was just dropping out. In the end I think only like 50 guys finished. So I was like quite proud of my 30th place on GC, but I think that's the highest GC result I've had in a big race. And but yeah, not that that's what I'm bothered about, but yeah, anyway, but only 50 people finished, so actually I wasn't even in the top half of finishes. So yeah, 50 people finished, and a lot of them were all for the same illness, and I thought I was safe. But then literally the morning after the race, I woke up and had whatever this illness was that I think post-COVID everyone was sort of, I think, yeah, since COVID, I think there's obviously other illnesses that were going around because this wasn't COVID, it was just, yeah, something else, some other bug.
After some Belgian races, including Gent Wevelgem, you did the Tour of Flanders for the first time and came away with a seventh place finish. Talk me through this amazing result and race.
Yeah, I think that was probably the biggest, and yeah, in a lot of ways, that was like my best. Yeah, that was my best result of the season. I'd almost say, yeah, best form of the season in terms of like one day races. And yeah, I think everything just went really well. We kind of prepared. That's the most sort of prepared I've felt for one of those sort of for such a big race. I really sort of knew the course almost like you'd do your revision before a test. Like I knew what climbs were coming and all of that sort of stuff. And I feel like I really, I got the positioning. It felt like all the other races where I was like, oh, I should have done that there, should have done that there. In Flanders, I did everything in the right sort of. I did everything right, really. I just maybe, yeah, I overextended that last time on the Coeurmont. But the only things I would do differently are related to like hopefully being a little bit stronger in the years to come, rather than like tactically. I think I just ran out of legs at the end, just because yeah, it's so hard. But I still, yeah, that was no, it was yeah, it's really special, especially when I. That's like the race that I mean, I watched that race when I was like 14, and my VCL, my local like old club, always go and do the Sportif the day before and then watch on the Coeurmont. So yeah, to be up there in a race like that is pretty cool.
There was another new race for you, Amstel Gold. What was that atmosphere and experience like?
Yeah, that was a sort of continuation from Flanders, really. I still had the sort of good legs that I sort of found or kind of got to in Flanders. I think I had a bit of a mechanical at one point, and that sort of put me out of the race. But it's definitely a race that I want to do again because it's, yeah, it's unique, and it's, no, I really enjoyed it. I think it's that borderline, like if I'm on a good day, it would sort of get around and could do quite well, but it is still that a little bit hillier, so it's like depends on Yeah, I think I would do it next year, I think. But yeah, it's a cool race.
After that was one of the toughest one day races in cycling, Paris-Roubaix. How did you find it?
I obviously going into Amstel and Roubaix off the back of Flanders, I was kind of really maybe a little bit too confident. I don't know if coming to Roubaix. I also think sort of legs wise, I was maybe on a downwards trajectory from Flanders. I sort of maybe peaked in Flanders and then sort of wasn't quite at the level for Roubaix, but the same level at least. But that's just something to sort of learn for the future. But I did get unlucky. I punctured and then crashed as a result of that. So spent a lot of the early sectors chasing. So I was sort of chasing, chasing, chasing. I'd already missed the split because it split really in a really weird way. It was basically like crosswinds that Ineos split it whilst all the other kind of hitters were sitting at the back. And I was sort of sat at the back with all of them thinking, yeah, this is fine. And all of a sudden there was basically a big split between the two groups. And yeah, that was my first mistake. And then obviously got a bit unlucky and just, in the end, it quickly became getting to the finish rather than competing for any sort of result. And at one point, I didn't even think I'd get to the finish. Luckily, I found a sort of group with Luke Rowe, and he was sort of motivating everyone to keep riding, get there. And yeah, when you're going slowly and swinging on the cobbles, it's really not very nice. It's a horrible experience. But I hope to go back there with, yeah, still such a cool race. I think whether you do well in it or just get around it, getting to that route, that velodrome is, yeah, that's a pretty iconic, well, probably the most iconic finish in cycling, I'd say. So yeah, that's still to finish Roubaix is pretty special. But I'd almost had a better Roubaix the year before, with Sonny winning, and I felt like I was going well myself then. So I was a little bit disappointed maybe, but Mate still did a really good ride, and I think he had a puncture at one point that was quite unlucky. But anyway, he was absolutely smashing it at Roubaix, so that was really good. Still a good. It kind of ended a really good classics block with the team. I think we were really happy with how things went, and I think it's as a result of us all staying in this one house in Belgium that they rent out this sort of massive. I think it was like an old barn, but the team had sort of rented it out, and it's like basically instead of living in a hotel, you're almost living in just like a big house with everyone. And I think that makes, the environment and the it makes it much more fun as well. That was good.
Wow, that sounds really cool.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a cool barn. Good setup.
Bahrain Victorious chose you to race the Tour de France for the second year in a row. How much were you looking forward to getting to ride it again?
I was actually quite nervous because I was meant to do Tour de Suisse, and I ended up I finally got COVID basically. So I did an altitude camp preparing for the tour, which was like the first time I've done altitude before. So I was kind of feeling like I was really, really going really, really well. And yeah, I unfortunately got COVID, but I think that I still had the kind of form from the altitude camp that definitely helped. I think that sort of stepped me up a level that I'd not really got to before. And then so I was a bit like basically hadn't raced for a while and was going straight into the tour. I kind of knew I was going well. It was just the fact that it was, it's the Tour de France, and I felt a little bit like, oh, I haven't raced since May or whatever. I had quite a big gap basically. But no, I think that in the end, no, I was that start in Copenhagen was really, really cool. Like the amount of fans and the team presentation. Yeah, it was a really good start, and I am very glad I did it for a second time, and I hope I'll do it again next year. But yeah, nothing's confirmed it as of yet.
The first stage was a time trial around Copenhagen. Did you enjoy this start to the tour?
Yes and no. I think the time trial itself was great. Like the in the around Copenhagen and the fans and everything, but I think just because of the weather, and I made the mistake of watching Bissiger sort of crash and sort of slide out, and because when you before you're warming up, you just got the TV on in the bus showing the race, and I kind of saw him crash a couple of times. And I think I may have wussed out a little bit on in some because it was quite technical, and I think I
Mm.
that was where I didn't do so well in that technical side of that, and ended up, yeah, not really having, I wasn't very happy with it basically, but it's still a cool, it was still a cool start. And then the next road stages were really, really cool with that massive long bridge, and yeah, it was wicked.
In stage five, you lost Jack Haig to a crash. How was it as the team to have lost a main rider again so early on in the tour?
Yeah, that was really, really rubbish. I was going to swear there. Yeah, that was really rubbish. It was weird because it was basically the same, the same feelings as we had the year before. Like, just everyone being really down and kind of like, oh, what do we? Because the whole point of the first, basically the goal of the first 5 days was to get Jack through them, and yeah. And stage five was that was the Roubaix stage, which was absolute carnage, kind of almost different to Roubaix in the way it was so hard between the cobbles, and the cobbles were actually the easy part where you could sort of relax. But it was going, the thing is, it was going really well, and we were in the, there were a few of us in that the group of 40, or it was like 40 or so that were coming into the last few sectors, and yeah, there was a crash with like a hay, it was like with a hay bale, I think it was actually the motorbike going around a roundabout hit, sort of clipped the hay bale that went into the road, and then Caleb Ewan hit the hay bale, and that then knocked Jack off, but which is so basically just unlucky. Like, yeah, it was really, really annoying. But it's that's part of the sport, and I think we it's just in grand tours, it's just all about sort of picking it up, picking, staying positive and going for the next. For the next option, which was Damiano, who fought as much as he could for the GC, and then when that sort of went out the window, it was then looking just for every opportunity we could get to try and get something. Yeah.
On stage eight, you gave it a go in the breakaway, but got caught. How did you feel to be at the front of the race?
That was really cool. I really enjoyed that day, actually. There was only three of us in the break, so it was quite a long, quite a long day out. But I was, yeah, that was kind of. I started feeling, feeling like I was going really well, and yeah, I mean, it was always doomed. Like I knew, I kind of gone into that stage like, right, I'm gonna try and get in the break. Like I was, when you're all in for the break, and then I kind of sort of expected there to be maybe a couple more guys, but I think thanks to Catania was really, it's like really quite a bit more experienced than me, and he basically, he sort of got us to. Basically, kind of play with the bunch a little bit, so it made it easier for us. Like there was one point where we were just riding really easy, and in order to, because the bunch, they don't want to catch you too soon, because then people they want to catch you at the right moment, which kind of almost helped. Yeah, I basically just stuck it out until, and yeah, ended up getting caught just on the last climb. I think looking back, actually, at that sort of stage in the future is a stage I wouldn't go in the breakaway for. Like that kind of finish. Looks quite similar to some of the staging of Vuelta that I did. It was sort of in the top five then. So, yeah, I think I won't be in dirt going in that sort of break next year. But it was still, yeah, to be in the front of the Tour de France with all the camera bikes and everything. It's yeah, that was really cool actually.
On stage 10, you went into the break again. You got close to the win but couldn't quite make it, finishing ninth. Can you talk me through the stage?
Yeah, that was again. That was quite a short stage, and the fight for the breakaway was massive. Like everyone, it was everyone sort of knew it was going to be the break that would make a break that would make it. And I think in the way the finish was, it was just quite a long but not too super steep climb, and then sort of ramped a bit more within in the last sort of 3K. So basically, not really a finish that suits me, and so I wasn't really trying to get in the break, but. I think, sometimes with these breakaways or whatever, you're kind of, if the more desperate you are to be in the break, sometimes it's less likely to happen. And, in, when you're all trying to, a few guys in our team that wanted to be in the break, and I think if you're all trying, I still would, want to be there and help out. And I ended up, basically ended up following the right move that got to the win, got to the breakaway, which was cool. And we had sort of me and Lewis Leon there. And he, yeah, the finish was basically suited a little bit more to him, so I kind of, I did my best sort of helping him in the finish. I think he sort of attacked with not too long to go, but it didn't and I was sort of closing behind him, but it sort of ended up coming together, unfortunately. But I yeah, again, to be in that break again, I was like, yeah, this is, I'm definitely going really well. We were just disappointed because, winning, if teams, if you can just win what a stage for the team, it's just such, it means such a big thing. And yeah, we were pretty close that day. Yeah, looking to in the future, I'd almost sort of maybe try and back myself a little bit more because the way it came down to it was a bit of a sprint. I think that sort of sprint maybe, but it was a hard finish. I was quite surprised to be there on like a sort of climb finish. I was, yeah.
There was a protest at that stage as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was. Yeah. That was horrible actually, because we had to sort of stop and then start going. It wouldn't have been so bad in the bunch, but we had to sort of stop, and then getting going again was not nice at all. It's quite a weird experience. Yeah, to be sort of not quite knowing, like, are we supposed to keep going? Obviously, we had to stop because the cars can't go through. But my initial thought was like, well, let's keep going. But yeah, it was strange.
After a few hilly stages, including Alpe d'Huez with Tom winning and an amazing atmosphere on the climb, you went into the break again in stage 13 and you just lost out on the win, coming second to Mads Pedersen. What were your emotions like after that race?
Yeah, I was quite I was disappointed, to come in second is obviously winning a stage of Tour de France is such a massive thing, and it's something that I want to do in my career, hopefully. And yeah, I mean, I didn't think that I'd be so close so soon, maybe, but at the same time, I was, I put myself in the position, and I again to be in that breakaway was really hard, and made the select group that, such a good break. We had some, like Gallagher and Kung and people that were really strong. I just, looking back now, I've got no regrets with how I did it. I think Mads was just, I've since spoken to Mads afterwards, and I don't think, I'm not slow in a sprint, but he is pretty much a bunch sprinter. And he was just so strong that day that I needed to attack on the climb, but I couldn't attack. So it was kind of a case of, yeah, I thought maybe I could surprise him in the sprint, but there was no chance at all. Which second in stages Tour de France is still pretty cool though. Just yeah, I think I'll be knocking on the door at some point, I'm sure. Again, I'm sure I created enough opportunities last year. I'm sure there'll be more to come.
Definitely. Another go for the win in stage 19, but ended in 18th place finish. Can you tell me about that stage?
Yeah, that was a weird one because we kind of wanted it to be. We were all, at that point, it was all like, okay, this is our last chance. We're all going to go full for the breakaway. So Mate got in the break, but there was only sort of five strong guys. But it basically, the bunch, I think it was, I can't remember what team it was, but the bunch basically controlled it immediately. The bunch controlled it for a sprint. But we sort of hit these sort of hillier roads within the last 40K or something. And it was like, okay, there's people are looking more tired here. This split's happening. And I basically sort of, a few guys started attacking again because they basically caught the break quite early. And yeah, a few guys started attacking again. And it was like, well, I saw it as a good opportunity to basically try again. And yeah, there were three of us just, working away on the front of the bunch. And it was looking, I don't know, in situations like that, you're never sure. You just sort of keep going. You don't want to almost want to think about whether or not you're going to make it or not. You just have to kind of keep working together or whatever. But no, that was close, but it didn't fit again. It didn't, it was, I was just, it was cool to be lighting up the race rather than it. I was gutted that I got caught or whatever. I was quite happy with the fact that I made that, made the move and sort of done what I did. I just, yeah, it was just a shame to be, just get caught when I did. I think if it was a flatter finish, it might have been maybe been slightly different. I don't know. But if it was a flatter finish, I think it was the sprinters were quite tired. I think that was a result of it being because Laporte won, but he got sort of had attacked across to us and then went over the top. I think if, again, to be honest, I don't know if I'd be, hopefully in the stages like that in the future, I'll be maybe trying to go for the doing almost trying to do what Laporte did, because that's, yeah. But no, still, to be on the front at the tour again, as I had been in other stages, I think it's, all good really. But I was, yeah, it's a shame. Yeah.
The next day was a time trial and you came eighth. That's such an incredible result.
Yeah, that was, again, though, that was kind of, I'd done well on this last, similar to the year before. It was, there was time trial stage 20, and I think I was 15th. So I kind of go into that, I was like, oh, I was hoping to do a bit better than what I'd done the year before. And I think knowing that I can sort of back up towards the end compared to other people. And yeah, I was, I to be honest, it wasn't that, it wasn't the time trials aren't a nice experience, and even if it's a good one, it's not a nice experience. But that one did feel like, I timed the effort, done the effort quite well, but actually it was, it wasn't quite the pace that I, we were quite ambitious with what I was going to try and, my target or whatever. And I think immediately I sort of had to like pull it back a little bit, because I was like, well, this, I can't do this till the finish. So it was, the time trial itself wasn't very nice, but to be eighth in the in a TT, top 10 in such a big, in a TT at the end of the tour, is really, it kind of showed that, yeah, I've got that, I've sort of got that in my locker as well, that kind of course as well. And I think that's what just sort of gave me confidence going into the Commonwealth Games as well after the tour.
The final day heading into Paris, you got another top 10. That's just an amazing tour for you.
Yeah, I think I was, yeah, I think just because the team, we didn't really have a sprinter there, so it was like, oh, Fred, you're fast, you can try and Mate, they'll help you try and, get a result in the bunch sprint. And I think everyone's so knackered, like a lot of the sprinters are knackered or whatever, that yeah, you sort of have a chance to, yeah, to be sprinting on the shoulder. It's weird, yeah. I kind of, I think, once I've had off season now, and I'm sort of slowly getting back into the training, I almost feel like I was a different, different person then. Like, it feels far away from where I am now. It's funny talking about it, Yeah, but yeah, 10th on the Champs-Élysées, not bad, not bad.
How did it feel to know that the commentators were talking about you and your racing so much?
Yeah, I think it was weird. It's kind of, it's, yeah, no, it is a bit weird. It's kind of, yeah, I only just speak what I'm thinking at the time, but maybe that's what is people like, I don't know, for with interviews and things. I have noticed that since, this coming out of off season, what I have had to, not that there's any, not that I don't mind doing podcasts at all, but I've been, doing things like being asked to do more, that's more talking or whatever. But I think that's good. I think that's again part of, we're not just cyclists. I think it's nice to let people appreciate how I am off the bike, I think. But it is a bit strange, because, it's like, so yeah, people telling you that you're just, that I'm really nice or whatever, it's like strange.
It was really nice, like after you had got close to a win, how honest you were in the post-race interviews, because sometimes people can be a bit sort of scripted with not wanting to say, but you definitely said how you feel, and it was really nice to like hear that from a rider.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Maybe, yeah, maybe it's the fact that my family are in the my dad's an actor, and that maybe it's in my blood to be a bit more comfortable in front of the camera. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
So you came back to the UK for the Commonwealth Games. You represented England in the time trial and got a silver medal. I was at the venue watching the start and finish, and it was amazing to see you come away with the medal.
Yeah, that was really nice. I kind of, coming off the tour, I kind of was hoping for the same sort of sensations as last year, where I sort of felt like I'd absorbed it and was going well, basically. And I think that course kind of favoured being just really fit, because it was a case of sort of going sort of pretty really like quite hard over these sort of small climbs.
and then resting and then doing it again and doing it. Keep it wasn't that it basically wasn't that flat and that many sections where you sort of had to just ride a sort of more constant rhythm. It was a bit sort of stop starty, and I think that sort of course with the condition I was in after the tour was really suited me. So I kind of knew, yeah, I thought I could do well, but yeah, that was, actually looking at it, being that close to even to winning the thing as well. It's exciting looking at. But I think it's a case of maybe, there'll be time trials that don't suit me as much, and it's a case of finding ones a bit like that Commonwealth Games that suit me and kind of. Because you can't really work on everything. Like time trial, and you don't want to do a bit of track. It's like it becomes like there's so many. I do want to. I don't want to just be like quite good at or good at everything. I think it's, time trial is, yeah, it's another thing to be. It's nice to be good at it, but yeah, there is with technology and stuff. There's so much. There is quite a lot of effort that has to be put in. But I am interested in getting a bit more maybe. Going into the wind tunnel, getting a bit more aero because there's so much that you can do to sort of optimize and stuff. And I already felt really quite optimized. I had like these new custom handlebars for the Commonwealth Games, and yeah, it was really I was really really happy with that. A little bit disappointed with the road race. I think I rode the road race a bit too confident. Like, yeah, I should have played. I definitely could have played the road race a little bit better. I was going really well. I think that kind of, I'm feeling really strong. And that almost made me, yeah, try maybe too many things, or because yeah, I ended up trying to sort of go for the sprint at the end and was didn't really actually have that much left. I felt like I should have got a medal in the road race as well. To be honest, I was a bit disappointed. But no, to come away with the silver in the time trial was really really cool. It was, and also you kind of, I think coming from the tour, you don't realize that the Commonwealth Games is. It's a really big thing, and like the whole experience being in a village and stuff. Like I might, hopefully I go to the Olympics, but just to have that games sort of games feel, I've never had that before, and that was really nice. I think you kind of get a lot of sort of mates saying, "Oh wow, set silver in the." Whereas in cycling terms, it almost doesn't feel as big because most of my team. Are members of countries that aren't in the Commonwealth, so they're like, "What?" Obviously they're supporting me for it, but they're kind of it's not regarded as big of a deal as for yeah the people from the UK.
It was really nice to speak to you when you're in between the break of being on the hot seat. I noticed that quite a lot of people wanted to speak to you. Did you notice that there were a lot more fans once you'd come back from the tour?
Yeah, I think that's what's been nice is I think even at the tour, like with journalists and the world as well, is I've had to get better at, it's all part of the job, really. Not that I mind doing it. I just, like okay, you with you guys it's different, but like journalist wise, you have to get better at sort of speaking to people before the start of races. And it was always actually quite nice at the sort of tour in the world where it's like, oh, they want to speak to me today. I'll go and have a chat. It's like. Yeah, it makes you feel special.
So you mentioned about the road race. I noticed it was a bit different from sort of your typical world tour race because of the teams were like your country. Did you feel that when you were racing?
Yeah, it was very much like a national champs, but it almost went the break almost went even easier than a national champs because people had team there were teams in the break and stuff, so it was a really odd race, but again, I managed to sort of be in that move of people. I think I was just going a bit too. I was almost going too well. I needed to sort of not show my cards too much and pretend like I was suffering a bit more. I think that's what I would have done differently, but it was yeah, really good crowds.
So after Commonwealth Games, you went back out into Europe for another grand tour. The Vuelta started in the Netherlands, not too far from Amsterdam. Were you looking forward to the tour?
Yes and no. I think initially it was proposed to me before the at the end toward coming towards the end of the tour. It was like, oh, we think it might be quite a good idea to do the world. And I think then I was sort of like, yeah, I don't know about that. But I almost didn't tell myself I was doing it until, I was there doing it. I kind of tried to not really think about it because it is such a, it's another pretty big thing to be doing. But in terms of, it's 2, 3 weeks just racing your bike. But it kind of worked out quite well because I didn't have to train that much after the tour. I was still going pretty, still basically come out of the tour in good shape. And I think actually, yeah, went into the vault with that team time trial in Holland, and that was sort of first proper team time trial I've done with the team, which was interesting one. But yeah, that was actually good fun. And then yeah, I think actually, even the first couple of stages, I was like feeling that I was in the in really good shape still. But I was almost sort of taking it day by day to begin with. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, it seemed like a lot at the time, but actually, I think because it was the tour is so stressful, and so I don't think the work was. I think they're physically similar in terms of effort required, but I think just the tour is so much more stressful than the bunch stuff. That the days in the Vuelta that sometimes can get a bit boring because you're just riding along these big, what's sort of smooth Spanish roads. But I think just the nature of the roads and the Vuelta itself, it was actually, I just found it so much easier than the tour. I think going from the tour to do the Vuelta, the Vuelta just seemed like just so much more, a bit more relaxed, and that meant that, it meant it was a bit easier on the head, I'd say. But still, yeah, I don't know how many more times I want to do 2 Grand Tours in a year. It's quite a lot. So you'd miss it, have any summer. Just come back from the world in September already.
Have to mention about the team presentation and the boats that you'd get in after the team presentation. I thought that was really cool. Did you like that little feature?
That was really cool because there were sort of people shouting, mostly because we had Wout in our team, which was nice. So like, if having a Dutch rider in your team for Dutch fans to sort of go crazy about was cool. And I think that was probably the weirdest team presentation I've ever done. I've not done that sort of thing before, so no, I really enjoyed that. There's lots of teams sort of rocking the boats, like, and sort of messing around. It's funny.
So, as you said, the Vuelta started off with the team time trial. Did you enjoy this?
Yeah, it was nice because we were all a bit. I think in being probably the strongest time trialist there, it makes it okay. I had quite a big job to do on the front, but actually, I kind of it wasn't as hard. If you were the weakest person in the team, it'd be a lot. I think it'd be a lot harder. I really enjoyed it, and I think we did pretty well considering. It was considering it was sort of me and Yasha that was and Gina maybe that would bring the pace up, but I think we didn't have the strongest team time trial team compared to the other team. So no, I think we were actually it was quite technical though, but no, it was no. I think there should be more team time trials. I think it's a good discipline. Yeah.
You made it into the breakaway in stage 5 and came close to the win with a third. This put you in the young rider's jersey. What was it like to wear that?
Yeah, that was sort of the first stage. I think that was some of the best legs that day was some of the best legs I'd had the whole season. I think looking back at it, because the climb we did was really it's not a nice one in the Basque Country, and yeah, I was sort of pushing on and going well up it. I think it was just a shame that that FDJ guy was there for the red jersey, because I think yeah. Like I really thought we were going to catch Marc Soler. There was one point where I really thought, kind of almost assumed that we were going to catch him. But yeah, I maybe could have played it a bit differently. Just I think in these situations, I've where I've been got quite good legs. I kind of end up maybe doing a bit too much, and I think I've got to try and pretend, do a bit more acting. I think pretend that I'm suffering more, and then do one attack rather than yeah. Because in the end, that I let that sort of French guy who was following me sort of get into my head a little bit, because he was just focusing on the red jersey, and yeah, I kind of should have maybe like just forgetting about him, because I would have always beaten him in a sprint and Yeah, tried to get across to, I don't know. I don't know. Still a good stage, cool stage though. And again, to be in that breakaway, which took ages to get and sort of make the right moves. I really felt like last year I was doing, you know, I hope that I can do the same next year and sort of get myself into some more breakaways, because I really got quite good at like working out when the right moment was to go for it.
So 2 days later, you got another third place finish in a close sprint. Were you disappointed to be so close to a win?
Yeah, I think that was the one day where, okay, the 2 days before I maybe could have done a few things differently, but I think I felt like I didn't mess up a little bit that one. I think that was the most disappointed I've been after a race in a long time, you know, since maybe I was a 12-year-old in terms of disappointment levels. Yeah, I think, you know, I think we've done such a good job to stay away from the bunch that stage. Like it really was, you know, it really was a like a almost like a team effort from the breakaway guys. No one was everyone was pulling their weight. It was that perfect amount of riders. It's like six guys. You all kind of end up doing the same amount. When it gets much more than that, then people start sitting on or whatever. But we all basically had to, it was six of us or five of us. We all just had to commit to it. And that almost, yeah, that kind of meant that it got pretty close towards the end. But yeah, I basically led the sprint out, and it wasn't the parkour wasn't it wasn't the time to lead the sprint out. I think I was definitely the fastest guy there, and yeah, it was hard because I knew I'd messed it up, and the team were just really, you know, really were quite disappointed. Like everyone was disappointed. They were, oh, Fred, why did you lead it out? You know, like it was, yeah. Obviously, yeah, that's, I think to win that would have been, I just hope I don't get to the end of my career and I'm like, wow, why did you lead that sprint out of the water? What were you doing? Because yeah, that was a shame, that one. I think that was would have been my first win. That would have been really cool. But I think, yeah, I was maybe a bit too desperate for it. I don't know. But I didn't want to speak to anyone after that stage. I was like, I am not speaking to anyone. I just rode back to the bus, shouted.
After a rest day, you took 13th in the time trial and 8th in the following stage 11. How was it to be getting such high results in so many stages?
Yeah, it was really nice. I think again, because sort of GC wasn't quite going what where we wanted in the team. Almost a bit like the same situation at the tour. It sort of opened up, you know, chances for me. And like that eighth was in a bunch sprint, and you know, we didn't have. I was, you know, again, I'm the fastest or most sprintery type in the team. So again, got that opportunity to, and it's sort of shown that those sort of days sort of shown that. I think hopefully I'll be getting ridden for in a few more stages next year, which is quite exciting. I kind of, yeah, the time trial I was a little bit disappointed with, but I think, yeah, I was a bit disappointed that people like Enric Mas put me away, but I think the wind might have changed over the course of the day. But yeah, but again, that time trial, like I was saying before about courses that suit me, I wouldn't say it was, you know, it was more of just a constant power the whole way, rather than that Commie Games course, which is a bit more kind of up and down technical kind of job. But yeah, still up there, so no, definitely good.
Yeah, definitely. Stage 13 was another close one with a fourth place finish. Talk me through this stage.
Yeah, I kind of, there was one corner with 1K to go that it was a really easy stage, and everyone knew what the finish was. Everyone it was kind of It was, you know, everyone knew what was going to happen. There was no sort of breakaways or anything like that. And, you know, Trek were obviously controlling for Mads Pedersen. And yeah, I basically got a bit swamped coming into this right-hander with that. And because it was a bit of a climb, I kind of had to pace my effort to sort of move myself back up to the front. I think, you know, ideally in that situation, maybe in the future, I'll have, you know, sort of teammates helping to sort of not to stop that sort of swamp happening, because I was sort of floating a bit myself by that point. But yeah, it was actually, I was really, you know, I was actually, yeah, that was one of the best sort of 2 minute efforts I've ever done in terms of like moving that last sort of kilometer. And I was actually coming pretty quick. So
I just wish I was a little bit further forward because I had some. Yeah, maybe that might have even been another. And maybe I wouldn't have beaten Matt. I don't know. But that was another, good. I was happy with that again to be up there.
Stage 16 was another fourth place finish for you. There was an incident with Primoz Roglic that ended in him crashing. From watching the sprint at home, it was unclear to me who or what caused the crash, but unfortunately, some people on social media blamed you for it. How did you deal with these hurtful comments?
Yeah, to be honest, I didn't actually get that much. They published the statement a few days later, and it wasn't, it wasn't, it was just a bit out of the blue, their statement, the way that they did it, like not at the time or anything like that when the incident happened. Because, we sort of passed it off after the race as a racing incident. I mean, I did sort of think in my head when I crossed the line, like, oh, I've. I knew I'd sort of touched him, and I was a bit like, oh, kind of knew that, Roglic's crash was quite a big, it's quite a big deal, and I was sort of to be sort of, part of that is kind of mad, and so it was. I still did have some a few nasty ones, but the majority of the messages, especially after I'd sort of put the tweet out about it, what I sort of thought about it, I think actually, in the end, it sort of helped my side, if anything. I think I actually ended up getting more support as a result of it. But to be honest, it's hard, social media and stuff, because it could have gone the other way. People could have blamed me, and it, then it would, it's not, I don't know, it was a racing incident. I think a lot of times people can sort of jump, again, people almost are jumping on him, like, oh, what's he talking about? But it's, yeah, I think social media, it definitely taught me to just not. I stopped looking at Twitter, basically. I just sort of ignored, whether it was positive or negative. I think actually it was quite, again, quite weird to be being, to see people just talking about it and stuff. It was kind of, it was quite an odd experience. So I think the best thing to do was, because that night I was just sort of looking at stuff, but actually the best after that, it was like, no, just leave it. It's not worth looking at stuff. Because, yeah. I was really happy with that again, with that stage. But yeah, that's all the Roglic stuff. I mean, in the end now, it's quite positive because there's lots of memes and stuff. I even saw Ethan had sent me like one from a Reddit one, or like from, it's like a packet of a Halloween costume, and then people put up what the costume is, and someone had made one for me basically. I just think it's just quite weird. I found it funny in the end that yeah, there were sort of memes and stuff being created as a result of that. I think that was almost a cool part of it, rather than being a negative. I think it was good in the end.
As the World Tour began to draw to a close, on stage 19, you sprinted against Mads Pedersen and came away with second. Can you talk me through this sprint and stage?
Yeah, that was, again, we kind of were like, oh, maybe it's going to be a breakaway, but it was quite clear that Trek, they really wanted to control it for Mads at the end. And actually that was the first proper time where I've had people like riding on the front for me for a finish, which is really, really cool, to have guys like, obviously like for Mikel, the what hadn't gone how he'd wanted, but to have him riding on the front up a climb for me to have a go in the sprint. Because basically our goal was to drop most of the other sprinters on the climb. Which is actually really, meant the climb was really hard, but sort of I'd got over it with, it was basically just me and Mads and maybe a couple, I don't know, it was basically just me and Mads left from the more sort of sprintier types. So it's sort of quite clear what was going to happen at the finish. And yeah, I felt like I was pretty close. He had to open up quite early, and there was, yeah, I maybe hesitated a little bit going, maybe could have gone left on the other side of him, but I think he would have shut the door if I'd have done that. But that was the closest I'd come to him in a sprint. So it kind of shows that, on like a on in on raw power, it's, not possible in like a in the like at that stage of the tour. I think I was, yeah, I just didn't have the sprint power that he did. But I think when it's in a sprint like that, I still think I can, that there'll be chances hopefully to get some wins in that sort of situation in the future, which is really cool. And yeah, like I said, having people ride for you is really nice.
But also, you know, it does put a bit of pressure on, but it's good. I'm sort of looking forward to more of that next year, hopefully.
Yeah. You rolled into Madrid with a seventh place finish and second in the points classification. How would you sum up your Vuelta?
To have done my fourth Grand Tour in sort of 3 years being a professional, maybe my body doesn't like it, but it's definitely, I feel like that's going to set me up well for next year. And you know, I think to get to the end of the tour about again in still going, you know, still going well at the end of it, having already done the tour. I think it was, but it was almost the way the season played out. You know, I think getting COVID and missing Tour de Suisse, I think if I'd have done Tour de Suisse, I might have been going a bit better at the tour maybe, but I wouldn't have probably done the Vuelta because I'd have been more tired after the tour. Because I'd have done tour. But you know, there's so many things that in the season that sort of change the way things work. But you know, actually, I think I'm almost glad that I got, at the time I was like, oh my God, I got COVID, this is terrible. But actually, I wouldn't have done the Vuelta. And I think the Vuelta was where I sort of stepped up again, you know, after the tour. So no, I think it's definitely, I'm definitely glad I did it. But yeah, I did. But it also meant the season went really fast because, you know, 3 week tours are long, but they once you get into the rhythm of them, they go pretty, like it goes pretty quickly. So I sort of did the tour, had a break, had like 4 weeks in between, did the Welter, then it was time to go to Worlds, and then it's off season. It was actually quite, yeah, it was nice.
So, as you said, your season finished in Australia with the World Champs. Talk me through the race and what it was like to finish your amazing season.
Yeah, the world was, I just don't think I was going, I was just wasn't, didn't quite have the same. I think for a world like that, I'd like to have not done the world. I think, you know, ideal preparation didn't include the world, but obviously, you know, we still had a really strong team there. And yeah, that was the sort of, again, that was the first time, you know, it was sort of me and Ethan that were like the guys that we were looking out for in the race. And that was, you know, to be one of the key guys in a GB team at the World Champs. Again, I didn't think that would be happening this soon. So that was really cool. Just the whole week, the whole experience was wicked. You know, being with them guys, we just had such a laugh. I think the race wasn't quite how we wanted, but I don't think we would have done anything differently. The only thing I when the bigger move that Remco ended up was in went, I didn't. I told Ben Tullett to jump across to it on the climb, whereas I should have just jumped across to it myself. The problem was, it was a bit. We had like all we'd sort of talked about what we thought was going to happen in the race, and it was, yeah. I think looking back, maybe I should have. I would have made that. Could maybe should have been in that group because that might have given myself more of a chance of getting a result. But I think Ethan was still going in with a chance for a medal. So. It was definitely a step in the direction for the sort of GB national team. And I know we've got sort of, you know, looking to like Glasgow next year and stuff. I think it's building. It's like, you know, hopefully we'll have a world champion. One of us will be a world champion at some point.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Me and my family have loved watching you race this past year. I remember coming home from school on both the Tour and the Vuelta, and me and my mum screaming at the TV when you were close to winning. My dad works night shifts, and he remembers being woken up multiple times by us shouting. It really has been amazing to see your progression over the past year.
Oh, thank you so much. It does definitely feel like a progression from last year. So I can only hope that next year will be even better. But if it's not, doesn't matter. But yeah, still, no, I'm so happy with last year. It is weird though, you know, talking about it again in with how I feel on the bike now, you know, like when you've had time off and off, you know, you're riding your bike again after having some off time. It almost feels like, yeah, that was a different person. Yeah, I kind of find it hard to imagine myself in those situations again, almost, because yeah, it feels, yeah, riding my bike at the moment isn't quite as easy as it was, is what I'm trying to say.
Do you have any goals for next year?
I think again, just obviously I'd like to win a race because I didn't haven't quite managed to do that yet. But if I can build on last year, it's on this year, it's going to be a really good year next year. So that's the plan. Is to have, basically the same calendar, maybe without doing the Vuelta, just the one Grand Tour, and hopefully doing the Tour, and just building on, what this year was. But again, it's hard. Yeah, I'm not really someone that. Yeah, I don't want to look too far for the future. But maybe, obviously, I want to win Flanders. I want to win a Save the Tour de France. But yeah, we shall see. I know I'll keep trying. That's for sure.
What's been your favorite race this year?
I'd say Flanders. I think that was definitely my favorite race of the year. That was, yeah, without a doubt.
You've done some amazing races this season. Is there one that you haven't done that you'd like to do next year?
Maybe Strada Bianchi, maybe, because I did it in 2020. But it was in August, it was like 40 degrees, and I pulled out after like 60K. So I didn't really do it. So I would like to do that. But I don't know how that fits in with around like doing Tirreno or Paris. I'm not sure what that would look like. Because I think nowadays it's almost you almost don't want to do too many races, because then like the goals will still be Flanders and Roubaix. So I don't want to do too much in the build up before then. I want to, I'd like to be, peaking for that time. Just kind of working out what would work best for that, really.
Who's been your favourite rider to watch this year?
Ooh, I'd say Van Aert this year. I think maybe just because I was in the tour, and he was just like on just almost like on another planet, and it was just like, wow, this guy is so amazing. I think. Yeah, I think in his books he hasn't actually probably had as good a year as maybe he would have wanted. But I think, yeah, I was quite in awe of him, being there in like that stage where he attacked. What stage was it? Was it stage four of the tour? Where he attacked on the, there was like one sort of steep climb at the end, and Jumbo-Visma ripped it up, and he like to I was in that race and just. What he did was just so, yeah, it was something else. And I think, yeah, just I was quite in awe of just the amount of attacking he was doing. So yeah, Van Aert, I'd say.
Thank you so much, Fred, for all the time that you've given to me and my podcast over these past three episodes.
It's fine. Yeah. Well, maybe there'll be number four. Who knows? Who knows? No, it's all good. I enjoy it.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. A massive thanks to everyone who supported this podcast. Veloskin, Big Bubble Hats, Form Bikes, More Large, Alpina Sports, and Lake Cycling. If you have any feedback on this episode, I'd love to hear it. You can leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. It's great to know your feedback. Don't forget you can find me on social media platforms. And all of my other episodes are available wherever you get your podcasts. See you on the bike.